Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, man. And with the local DVD news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback.
More a solo. But tonight,
don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants. What's up with the fear? Making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom, exploding. Overpowering, over the competition. I'm towering, wrecking shop. When I drop these lyrics that'll make you call the cops.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Weigh In Sports Talk. I'm your host, Brian Tarvin. Trey Patterson is with me tonight. Trey, how's everything going, bud?
What's happening, Brian?
Wednesday night, hump day. We're almost there, man. Almost to Friday.
Yeah, almost there, buddy. I'm halfway through. A lot of news going on this week already. It's been a busy couple days, especially in baseball.
It has, and I've been working a lot lately and trying to keep up with everything. It's a full-time job keeping up with all the drama going on in the sports world these days. So, you know, Sunday night we talked a lot about the Sandusky, Joe Paterno, Penn State ruling that was coming down by the NCAA on Monday. President Emmert came out, Trey, and really hammered Penn State. And, you know, I still hear a lot of people, even not Penn State fans, are very upset about the way this came about with the punishment. How do you feel about the sanctions handed down by the NCAA to Penn State?
I think the only other thing that I thought would have been appropriate was some sort of TV ban. I think the rest of it's appropriate. And I heard an interview with Mark Emmert, and basically what he said was, you know, look, Penn State, the board of trustees and the president really reacted well to this. They were more, you know, they brought in free. They were interested in actually finding out the truth. They were interested in basically making sure this doesn't happen again. So they took the right attitude. But that's a very important thing to consider when you talk about, you know, how Penn State's reacting. And that's one of the problems I have with most of the fans for Penn State who I'm hearing, who keep talking about how, you know, the report was ridiculous and the punishment was ridiculous. Well, I think the punishment was deserved. And, you know, the NCAA could have done an investigation like they normally do and wasted a lot of time and money and come out with basically the same set of facts. I mean, Penn State did their own investigation. They had an FBI guy come in and do it, and this is what they're left with. So, to me, it's very hard for them to complain about, you know, the rule, oh, NCAA didn't follow their own rules and do their own investigation. Well, I mean, we really want to waste more time and more money and keep this on the front page. And if you're Penn State, this gives you a chance to actually tear that Band-Aid off and start moving on, Tarvin.
And, Trey, that's a good point. Before we even get started into this topic, I want to give the call-in number, 646-716-5564. We would love to hear from you. And how's the chat room looking tonight since you're running it?
So far up and running. I don't see anybody in here just yet, but, you know, I just got it up and running.
And everybody out there, get in the chat room, ask your questions, call in live, whatever you'd like to do. We'd love to hear from you. But, Trey, I'm going to list off the penalties right here, the NCAA, what they came down with. And what I heard, and I don't know if it's true, is that Emmert really told Penn State on Saturday or Sunday, you're going to accept what I do or you could possibly get the death penalty. And Penn State, from what I'm hearing, was in a position to where they really couldn't negotiate. You know, it was like, okay, we're going to sit here and wait on your punishment. And a lot of people believe it was just too fast. But you're right. I mean, why waste all of these resources when Penn State actually hired this person to come in and do a thorough examination investigation of it? So, you know, the only reason Penn State fans in general are not happy is because they got hammered. And that's the bottom line. So the fines were a $60 million fine, and that's 1 year revenue for Penn State, which, honestly, Trey, I don't think this was enough. I look at this number, and I'm thinking, you know, it should have been just, at least double that. And the $60 million will go to, like, building a second home for these kids, like abused children, some kind of home where they can go and get shelter or counseling. What do you think about the dollar amount of the fine?
I agree with you, Tarvin. I think it's super low. I mean, Penn State, one of the top five overall money-making brands in college football, and you know, it's good that they also got some, you know, they're not going to be able to get the bowl revenue from the Big Ten. But like I said, they're still going to get all those TV revenues, which are going to be a lot, Harvin. I mean, so Penn State is going to be just fine monetarily after this. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, a lot of people keep talking about is, you know, the money aspect, but this isn't exactly, it doesn't ever hit Penn State very hard in the money aspect, and it really doesn't. You know, I mean, but ultimately it's something that I really don't particularly have a lot of beef with, Tarvin, just because to me, the money hits more towards the future to me. So I'm not really big into the money aspect of this. I think the rest of it, you know, is more of a punishment towards, hey, you know, this is why we don't do these kind of things in the future. But the money, to me, now I don't really have a beef with the Tarvin. I mean, how much more do you think they should have had to give?
Honestly, since that was 1 year, I think, you know, $60 million is 1 year of revenue. I would actually have to go probably triple that, you know, and at least do something. You know, they have a 4 or 5 year probation, something along the lines of that. So we're going to touch on each of these things individually. And I think we have Courtney on the line right now from Last Word Sports News. He's going to join us and actually give us his opinion on these Penn State, on the ruling from the Commissioner Emmert. Hey, Courtney, how's everything going?
Doing good, Brian. How's everything going for you?
Oh, wonderful. It's almost Friday.
Yeah, and I'm hoping it gets here quick, too.
Oh, it better get here quick. You know, we're talking. I asked Courtney to come on tonight to share with us, Trey, about, you know, what he thinks about what the NCAA did to Penn State. And Courtney's with us, Trey. He understands that this is a bad thing that happened in sports. But I just want to hear what he says about what he thinks about the NCAA. Courtney, take the stage, bud.
Well, I mean, first of all, my heart goes out to the victims. And I'm no subject matter, you know, I'm no expert on this, but my take is this, and I was discussing this earlier with Brian. I'm not sure, having looked at it and having read some of the materials, some of the rules and regulations of the NCAA, that they should even got involved. The reason I say that is simply because this is a criminal matter. This was one guy doing something wrong, a bunch of guys covering up. If you look at the facts, the Penn State Nittany Lions football team program as a whole did nothing wrong. They did not break any NCAA sanctions. Nobody was paid to shut up. You know, maybe a janitor. I'm not sure if that's actually true. But nobody was, you know, no agents got involved. Basically, the program, in my opinion, did not do anything wrong. The guys who covered it up did something wrong. What I kind of associate this with is, for example, if I was to go out, kill a person, and four guys cover it up, the place where I work is not held liable for what I've done. Just me and those four guys. I don't understand how the NCAA was able to fine, to banish, to do all they did to Penn State when they also had no precedent in this whole case. Normally, when you have no precedent, it's hard to punish. I that's one problem. It's kind of like the baseball steroids era. Baseball couldn't punish those guys because they had no rule in place to begin with. And why did they, you know, so why did the NCAA even step in? I thought it was a internal issue mixed with a state issue or a federal issue, basically a criminal charge. So you got one guy criminally charged, four guys, five guys covered it up. That's the issue. So it's basically now, to me, they're going after the guys who covered it up criminally. NCAA-wise, I don't think they had right to step in. Now, having said that, my issue with this, being a former player, went to a small Division III school you've probably never heard of. But being a former player, what happens is that school, and we all know this, Brian, you know this, when you have a school that size, that magnitude, your football program pays for everything else. So they really didn't just kill the football program. They killed everything else. They killed the – because let's face it, people are not going to come and see a mediocre team, in my opinion. People are not – you know, you'll have your boosters there, but I believe even that's going to come into play because they now have raised the ticket prices before all this even occurred. So now you even screwed yourself even more. So now what happens is all your other programs, I believe they have a water polo program, that's pretty much shot. They have a lacrosse program, that's pretty much shot. You have, you know, a lot of programs in there that, yes, okay, they will be there, but they probably won't see the funding that they used to see. That's reality. And that's what I think about the whole thing. I think the NCAA overstepped their bounds, and they gave a team a death penalty without giving them the death penalty. And that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. You take scholarships away. I totally agree with the $60 million, and I even say more. $60 million goes to the victims, lifetime counseling, even proceeds from the game. But to take scholarships away, to ban them 4 years for bowl games, we already know that their top running back is ready to bail. How many is going to follow after him? What type of team are they going to be able to put on the field to compete? Nothing. You can't even compete with the Big Ten. And to take away Copa's wins, look, I know a lot of people are saying they need to be taken away. That doesn't matter. The game has been played. We know who won those games. You can't take that away. That's stupid. So the NCAA, in my opinion, overstepped their bounds once again, stepped into a position that they had no business stepping in. It was kind of like Congress stepping in through the baseball steroids thing. Why are you even there? You have nothing to – this doesn't concern you. This is a baseball issue. For me, this is a Penn State issue mixed with the criminal charges that the guys face. That's it. NCAA has no bearing here, and I just think that they totally blew it once again, but that's what the NCAA is to me. That's all I have to say.
Right?
Well, I mean – Courtney, I'm not going to disagree, and I guess looking at the NCAA rules, I'll give you my perspective, and I think this is where I understand the NCAA is coming from. One is there's some very, very vague language, like there is when lawyers write these things, they write them big for a reason. Now, of course, there's no precedent, but every time there's a first time that something happens, there's not going to be a precedent. I mean, if they had to rely on precedent, we would never have anything going on because you were saying, well, you never done that before. So to me, that doesn't matter. What matters is that there is language that the NCAA went after, and they put this language in there for a reason. That's because the NCAA can't think of this kind of thing. I mean, when they wrote their laws and wrote the rules that the schools were to follow to even have football programs, and let's be honest, people are talking about this like Penn State deserves a football team or Penn State has a right to a football team. They don't. They don't have a right to be part of the NCAA. They don't have a right to have a football team. Is something that the institution can have, but the NCAA doesn't have to let them play in their league. They have to follow their rules, and the rules are very vague when it comes to institutional control, and that's for this kind of thing to happen. One of the things that the NCAA actually did put Penn State on notice on over 10 years ago was that they had to comply with the Clery Act. The Clery Act is a federal law. Penn State, even up to today, still has not complied with that law, and they kept giving Penn State kept giving the NCAA the runaround, talking about how they were going to figure out a way to comply with it. Well, now we know what was going on, and they had an idea, and they were covering up this violation they would have had to report because it was a violation of the Clery Act. Everyone who knew something or thought their children were being abused has to report it because it's a public institution. So here's the deal. I mean, they did this to protect their image, and their image is football. And so the NCAA has every right to say if you're going to basically violate federal law in a way that harms many, many people, and not just harms them in a way that, you know, you can say there's some sort of insubstantial harm. We're talking about physical, mental abuse. And let's be honest, a lot of the way Penn State reacted to this in the very beginning is a lot of part of this because – even when this first broke and Sandusky, you know, first started having these allegations, it was Penn State who first came out very hard against those victims and said they were all lying. So, you know, when you have those set of facts and you have that institutional lack of control and you have basically them stringing along this federal act saying they will get around to complying with it one day, and all to protect their coach and their basically their institution of football, I mean, there's no other reason why they didn't report that. There's no other reason why it didn't get all the way to the top and then go, we're not going to report it. And that's because they had an image. During this time, they were very successful, and they're still a very, very successful brand. And so there, when you have this kind of thing going on inside the – and by the way, this all went down inside the football, you know, the football program's halls in the shower. This wasn't like and there is criminal liability when it comes down to if you and a bunch of conspirators – are doing something inside of a certain location, that location, if they know about it, and if they don't do anything when they're required to by law, a la the Clery Act, they can be held liable both criminally and civilly. So to me, they're well within their rights, the NCAA, to step in, and had they not done that, had they not sent this message now, I mean, what happens when a football player, you know, your star football player, you know, rapes a girl and they cover it up? I mean, there's no incentive for the universities to do the right thing unless the NCAA steps in and says, you do not deserve, you don't play football, you don't have these athletic, you know, abilities unless we as a school are complying with the laws that are given. And that's what the NCAA did, and that's why it was more important than Penn State in this one chance to make sure that the rest of the schools are on notice that this won't happen again. They will not cover this kind of thing up. So to me, this was a very important decision that the NCAA did, and they did the right thing, not only just for Penn State to set the record straight on what Penn State should have done, but also to put every other school on notice that they're not, their football programs, their baseball programs, their basketball programs are not bigger than they think, than real life is. And that's what I think, Garvin.
Courtney, would you like to respond to that?
Well, I mean, okay, you know, you got some very valid points, but I will say this. What this also has done is created a monster, so to speak, with the program getting in trouble. That okay, now are we saying now if anything happens with any other program, you know, a drunk driving or a bar fight, that, you know, all these sanctions are going to hit? I mean, that's pretty much what the precedent is now, isn't it? It's pretty much that. I know they're trying to say one time, but can we really say this is going to happen one time? Are we really going to believe that the NCAA is just going to do this one time? I don't think so. I think this has opened a can of worms that they probably won't be able to close later on.
Yeah, Courtney, I kind of agree with you there. Sorry, Tarvin. This is going to open up a new lane, but I think it's going to be limited to a set of facts where the university – and does something to either impede an investigation or a criminal activity, you know, say one of the players or coaches does something wrong, and rather than come forward with that information, if they're required to by law, I mean, drunk driver, you know, drug possessions, those kind of minor things like at programs all the time, you have no duty, no federal law requires you to report any of that. I mean, you were talking about the incidences of child abuse and, you know, sexual assault. So those are the kind of things that I think are going to, the NCAA would act on again if an institution chose to basically either hide information or cover it up, thereby protecting its image. I think that would be the only situation that I'd ever see this going forward. But I agree with Courtney. I think you might see the NCAA act on those. If that set of facts ever happens again, they would act on that.
The thing that I look at is the investigation, the way, you know, the NCAA, Courtney and Trey, they usually investigate things themselves and take their sweet time. But this seemed kind of weird that all of a sudden one day we heard the NCAA is coming forward the next day to do this, and it was almost like Penn State had no choice. It's either you agree with what I'm going to do or I'm giving you the death penalty, Courtney. What do you think about that part of it?
I don't know. I mean, this they gave I don't know. They gave the death penalty anyway to me.
Yeah.
I mean, really, because the way it looks, you know, you know, banned from bowl games, what, 4 years, you lose a lot of scholarships. The problem with this is it's kind of like the SMU thing. Okay, even when you are lifted of those bans, I mean, you still have this dark cloud over your head. You still have this, you know, issue over your head, and it, to me, that's not going to be lifted for quite some time. I do agree. I was very surprised that the NCAA just went off the free report, and that was it. You know, it was kind of like they trusted this guy to, you know, be the judge, jury, and executioner without doing their own investigation. That's not normally the NCAA way. I think Penn State was, you know, had to sign off on it just to appease a lot of people. But, you know, they gave them the death penalty anyway. That's about, you know, that's as harsh as you can possibly get without being the death penalty to me. You know, 4-year ban, scholarships lost, $60 million. And like I said, you know, to me, that just didn't take care of killing the football program, but, you know, it did so for the volleyball and the other programs that rely on that football money to come in. I mean, we're talking about a stadium. Death Valley got 100, not Death Valley, but got 108,000 seats. We can guarantee those are all full. Whereas in the past, you couldn't find an empty seat in the house. So, you know, they're going to be hurting from this. They gave them the death penalty without giving them the death penalty. And to me, I was very upset. You know, like I said, I have sympathy for the players. I was very upset with the fact that they waited so late to do something. Because now what you've done to me is these kids transferring to a new program where it's already July. I mean, you know, ball – practices have
it's
already
August.
Started.
It's August, Courtney. It's August, really.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's already August. You know, the teams have already been set. You know, lineups have already been set, and you know, spring practice is gone. Where, you know, workouts and playbooks have already been handed out, and you doing it so late. I mean, you just killed a lot of kids' careers. You know, I mean, yeah, they can stay there, but really. I mean, why would you? But the problem is, going to transfer, you're just going to be sitting on the bench anyway. So, I mean, really, they gave him the death penalty.
Yeah, and Courtney, before you go, I want to ask you and Trey this question right here. I think one thing unfair about this whole thing is, you know, the transferring part, he gives them an opportunity during this 4 years that anyone can transfer at any time. And that's kind of harsh. I would think maybe by the end of this season you should know. So, I mean, how can you build a program if somebody can just leave for any reason, really, and blame it on that?
Exactly.
Trey, what do you think?
You know, this is one of the things we talked about beforehand, Tarvin, that I was actually a proponent of because, I mean, you know, a lot of these students went to this school not knowing what had gone on in the hallways, and that this may change some of their opinions of, you know, there's still two coaches on that staff, Tarvin, who were part of Joe Pa's staff. And so, I mean, if I'm a player, I might distrust, you know, if that's my quarterback coach, you know. So, but I agree. I was surprised to see it go so long. I mean, I think there should be a period of, you know, you need to make your decision whether you're going to stay or leave. And I would say, you know, within the next, you know, the next school year would have been something that I think would have been inappropriate. Just because, I mean, this is the kind of situation that you can't blame a kid for wanting to leave this program right now. And it's not just about football and wins and losses. It's about maybe understanding that, you know, this is the program that covers up this kind of abuse. Maybe something that, you know, you as a person can't put your uniform on to play for a school like that anymore. And maybe not, but they should have a choice. And I think a year is probably plenty. I was surprised to see it more.
Courtney?
I totally agree. You know, I thought a year, that should be it. You know, how can you build a program where you know what I mean? How can you, Brian's already said, you know, he's got some coaches calling and recruiting his players, and some people aren't even calling him. You know, how do you build a program around that? And that's a problem. I mean, how do you sell that to a, you know, going to an 18-year-old's kids, you know, with his parents? How do you sell that? I really don't know. But, hey, yeah, you can leave at any time. I think that's ridiculous.
And you know, the 10 scholarships per season is the death penalty enough. There's no way you can compete with anyone, much less, you know, 10 people can leave anytime they want to as well. So before long, you're going to be having walk-ons, and that's really all you're going to have.
Exactly. Yeah. I think what they have to do is probably raid some junior colleges, you know, where, you know, you have a lot of kids who don't end up at the big D1 schools and go to smaller division schools and maybe say, hey, come play for a big program. I have no idea how you build a program like that.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. It's going to be a mess, and we're going to keep following it and see how Penn State survives. But, Courtney, I want to thank you, man, for coming on and joining
hey,
us.
No
we
no
really
problem.
Appreciate it.
Thanks
no
a lot,
problem,
Courtney.
No
good conversation.
Hey, good show. Good show.
Courtney.
See you guys.
Thanks, sir. See you Saturday.
Dear Carver, I have a question before we end on this. I just got a quick question. So both Ohio State and Penn State have now forfeited games during this period, and so they actually have forfeits against each other. So who's the winner there, Tarvin?
The SEC.
I find that very interesting that both schools have forfeited the same game. So that was one of the funnier things that come out of this, where we'll you know, forfeit their old game.
I never thought about that, but I want to run down the list of punishments real quick and get people's thoughts. And the call-in number 646-716-5564. And, Trey, they're vacating 112 wins from 1998 to 2011. And this is kills Joe Paterno's legacy. And I think that's exactly what it was intended to do, is push him back to where he can never get up in that top echelon of coaches anymore. What do you think about taking the wins away?
Well, I think, you know, when it comes down to institutional control, it's not the, you know, and then to be honest, the NCAA has taken coaching wins away for much less. I mean, Bobby Bowden lost, 14 wins himself, which took him out of the running for, you know, overall number of wins a few years ago because of the cheating scandal at Florida State. So, you know, and that wasn't even, you know, that was, you know, cheating on test. So, when it comes down to the NCAA taking games away, I mean, they've been very liberal with doing that in the past. I think, obviously, there was a thought that, you know, Joe Paterno had turned his back on this scandal and chose basically in a very particular way through the emails, you know, hey, I'm not going to do anything about this. And I think that was very impactful for the NCAA when they were thinking about, you know, to take wins away and certainly whether Joe Paterno deserves to have his name at the top of the record books. I can't imagine that wasn't a consideration they had. I mean, I think that would play very strongly if you're thinking about this whole, you know, how many wins did Joe Paterno lose? I think, you know, Courtney was right. You know, the games have been played. We all know what happened. But when it comes down to the record books and you pull up that top 10 list, Joe Paterno's name's not going to be on there anymore. You know, that means something as well.
And their goal is our kids and our grandkids, Trey, are not going to know who Joe Paterno really is in the scheme of being one of the all-time winningest coaches. That's what they're trying to do here. They're trying to, from history and going forward, they're trying to remove his name. And just like they took down the statue, but one interesting thing is they're losing sponsors now as well. And that's when you have to start really worrying if you're Penn State. State Farm actually pulled their sponsorship from Penn State. What do you think about that? Now, that's big.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, there's going to be a lot of sponsors who are not going to be part of the Penn State tradition and brand just because of what they did, Tarvin. I mean, there's a lot of people who don't want to be associated, I mean, in the organization. So I'm not surprised that more aren't pulling out.
Yeah, and we're going to get off this Penn State thing, but we want to follow it. And, Trey, what is your prediction? How long is it going to take Penn State to recover from sanctions like this? I mean, it's going to be a long time, but can you give me a number that you're seeing, 10 years, 15 years? What do you see?
I guess, what do you mean by recover? I mean, it's not like Penn State has been a national title contender, you know, any time in the last, you know, number of years. I mean, I can't think of the last time that Penn State was a top five team. So, I mean, recover to what? I mean, I guess, give me quantification, Tarvin.
Let's see. 10 years. Give me in between now and 20 years. How long is it going to take Penn State to be relevant again, to shake off all of these sanctions in order to play? I'm not talking about reputation. I'm talking about being able to recruit a full team and actually compete and to win the Big Ten.
I think they'll be able to compete rather quickly. I mean, Penn State has a huge following. I mean, they're a team that has a big recruiting base. I think that just like USC. USC wasn't really affected by their sanctions all that much when you consider how many wins they've put up and the kind of football team they have ready to go after the sanctions end. I think Penn State's going to be somewhere. I mean, you're going to see at year five, they're probably going to have a team ready to compete. Whether they win the Big Ten or not, I mean, I don't know. I think talking about 10 years, Tarver, down the road, I think they're going to have a Big Ten championship within the next 10 years.
I'm going to say a little longer than that. But here's the deal. I think it all depends on their coach. Will this coach they have now, will he stay with Penn State and show loyalty and just trust in this program that he's putting it in the right direction? That's the whole key. If they start losing coaches every year or two and just trying to get anybody, I think it's going to be more along the 20-year line. But if this coach comes in from New England and actually recruits these kids and gains their trust, I think he can do it, you know, within 10. You might be right. But losing scholarships like this, Trey, it's almost impossible to compete this day and age because of the debt factor. And that's what's going to kill Penn State.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to hurt them, but, I mean, you know, there's some schools that can recover just because of the walk-on factor, because of the, you know, you're going to be losing. I think some of these kids are going to transfer, which will free up some scholarships as well. But, you know, I mean, I think this is – Penn State's a big enough brand that, you know, this is going to hurt them, but it's not going to cripple them. I disagree with, you know, what Courtney said about this is the death penalty. I don't think so. I think this is on the lines of what, you know, a little – obviously the harshest thing we've seen. But, I mean, this is not the death penalty. They get to play football. They get to recruit a good number of kids every year. I mean, it's not the full number, but they're going to give out a lot of scholarships. Obviously, I don't think you're going to be getting any, you know, number one recruit in the nation to Penn State, but they haven't been recruiting that player recently anyway. So, I mean, it's going to set them back, but, you know, it's not going to set them all the way back. I think, you know, I really do think that Penn State's a big enough brand to recover from this.
Well, I think I kind of agree with Courtney on that about the death penalty, because there's not much difference in the death penalty than what they have now. Either way, death penalty or not, it's going to be almost impossible for them to field a team, competitive team. And I'm talking about being underdogs to Ball State at home here. That's what kind of team I'm seeing Penn State going to have. And it might not be this year. It might be – it's going to catch them. Usually the first year or two in probation, Trey, doesn't – really, you know, it doesn't show. But then after that, once these players leave and you're, you know, the recruits keep coming in year after year and you're getting the last players that can't get in anywhere else, that's when you're going to see Penn State start losing to Ball State and teams like that and Toledo and just be a laughing stock of college football. But we're going to follow them and we're going to keep everyone updated, and we will have predictions on Penn State at a later time. But now switching gears to staying in college football, we're going to break down Georgia and Stanford, Trey. And any listener out there, 646-716-5564. And, Trey, we're going to start with the Georgia Bulldogs. So what are you thinking about Georgia? What?
Sorry, I was saying, Georgia this year, they come out with a lot of hype, Tarvin. I mean, a lot of hype's going on Georgia. I mean, obviously they lose their star running back, but there's still a lot of folks picking them to win the East. So, I'm not sure they're going to do that, but there's still a lot of folks believing in them.
Well, I'm going to tell you about Georgia. And anytime Georgia is picked to actually win, to actually favor to win the East or favor to win a national championship, they're going to choke under Mark Richt, and it's just one of those things that's given, man. I look at Georgia right now. Excuse me, I've said Penn State so many times. Looking at Georgia, you know, they lose their star running back, and this guy was the future of that team. But, Trey, one thing that concerns me about Georgia and that people don't forget, they have a great defense. Don't get me wrong, one of the best in the country. Rambo suspended, though, their best defensive player. Their defensive line is one of the best in the country. But their offensive line trade took a huge hit. I mean, you lose, like, I think it was three all-SEC offensive linemen. So who's going to protect Aaron Murray? And actually, who's going to catch the ball this season, Trey?
Well, I mean, that's a question that I think we'll know the answer to really soon in the season. I mean, they come in with a – I mean, it's not like this is a team that didn't have depth last year. So, I mean, I think that they're going to be a pretty good team this year. We'll see soon if, like Mark Richt, you know, says that, you know, they have all that, they have depth behind, you know, Crowell. I don't know. I mean, those are some really young kids who are getting, you know, really big shoes now, you know, starting running back in the SEC. And but, you know, they don't have the toughest – well, I know we're about to break down their schedule here, but their schedule isn't the toughest in the SEC. So, to me, I think they're going to be competitive this year. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I mean,
they
I think they have a schedule.
I think, yeah, and, you know, when I'm telling you defensive players, Trey, and I'm talking guys like Jarvis Jones, Sean Williams, and Bakari Rambo, I mean, when you think of defenses, you can put them right up with the LSUs and Alabamas this season. But I think their offensive line is going to get them, and not having an experienced running back that can pick up the blitzes and block. But, Trey, do you want to go ahead and start us through this schedule?
Yeah, let's go ahead and start, Tarvin. So let's look at their first four, Tarvin. We got their home against Buffalo, and that's not the Bills, so that's probably not going to be a tough game. They're at Missouri, so, you know, welcome to the SEC, Missouri. Florida Atlantic, who actually might be a little tougher than they think, and then Vanderbilt, and those last two are at home. I think they're going to be 4-0 after that, Tarvin. I think actually their toughest game could be at home against Florida Atlantic. I think they'll do just fine on the road against Missouri.
So you think Florida Atlantic's going to be a tough challenge for them at home?
I'm not saying tough challenge, but it's one of those teams that I think will play better than people expect them to. Florida Atlantic actually has been recruiting a lot of players in the Florida region who are honestly being recruited by Miami and Florida and Florida State. They've actually nabbed a couple of guys, you know, three-star guys, but, you know, who actually can play the game. So Florida Atlantic, you know, they have a chance to actually be over 500 this year, which is saying a lot for a Florida Atlantic team.
Yeah, you are. And you know, when you say that game, I'm not really looking at that game. I think the Missouri game will be tough just because it's their first road game of the season. It's early. The offensive line hasn't gelled. There's been no really chemistry built. That's a dangerous game. Even though I think they'll win this game, I think it's going to be closer than people think. I know a lot of Georgia fans are saying they're going to win by 30 points, but it's going to be a tough time to go in. And Missouri's got a tough crowd to deal with, and a dual-threat quarterback that can make life difficult for Georgia if they're not scoring points. So, but Vanderbilt at home as well. Vanderbilt's one of those teams that play Georgia tough. They've beaten Georgia before, and Georgia's had real good teams, even better than this one. So Vanderbilt's a little improved. I mean, that's a tough game. I want to pick Georgia just for it being at home, and I'm going to agree with you 4-0, Trey.
Yeah, and just so you know, Tarvin, Jason Humphreys in the chat room says 4-0 as well. So we're not alone in our prediction.
Okay, good.
all right, so let's go to the next four, Tarvin. Next four, we got Georgia's got Tennessee at home, at South Carolina, and they got an open game, open date, and then they're at Kentucky, and then at home, and then obviously in Jacksonville for Florida. So, Tarvin, I think these are going to be four games that are going to be tough for them. Obviously not Kentucky because they got to open right before they go on the road. But I think they're going to lose to South Carolina. I think they'll get past Tennessee because that's a home game. And I think that they're going to lose to Florida. So I got them 2-2 after this stretch.
I'm going to pick them losing to Tennessee and South Carolina. And I'm going to have them beating Kentucky. So I'm calling Tennessee with the upset here. With the offensive firepower they have and a chip on their shoulder, Tennessee always plays well in Athens. So I'm picking Tennessee. Georgia's going to lose back-to-back games to kind of throw this season possibly in tilt a little bit, Trey.
What do you got what do you have on the Florida game?
Oh, I'm sorry, the Florida? I think I'm going to have to go with the Gators in this one, man. I mean, it's just a cocktail party. It's in J. Jacksonville, I believe. So that's 3 out of 4, Trey. They lose right here.
Yeah, you got them. You got them 1-3 in that stretch. I got them 3-1. And just so you know, Tarvin, Jason Humphreys agrees with me. He has them losing at South Carolina.
Well, both of y'all need education then.
I'm sorry, I had them 2-2. I'm sorry, I had them 2-2. I had them losing to Florida. So actually, Jason's got a one. We're all different.
Good. But Tennessee, guys, is going to surprise people this season as long as their quarterback, you know, plays well and stays healthy. This team's going to be somebody not to overlook.
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee is going to be a little tougher than they were. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So now you're going to go to the Final Four, Trey.
All right, let's go. All right, they got Ole Miss at home, which is homecoming. They got they're at Auburn. We know how you're going to go for that one. They got a really tough Georgia Southern team. I think people underestimate the. I don't even know who that is. To be honest, Georgia Southern. Then we got Georgia Tech at home. So they're only road game in the last four is at Auburn. What you got, Tarvin?
I have them going 3-1, and they're going to lose in Auburn. Auburn's defense is going to really challenge that offensive line. That defensive line is stacked and very deep, and by then I look for Auburn to really have an identity. I expected a lot earlier than that, but there's some payback on Auburn's mind about Georgia, guys. So 3-1, they finished 8-4.
All right. I got them going 4-0, Tarvin. That's right. Yep. I'm waiting for you to waiting for me to get mad at me now that I'm beat Auburn.
Hold on, Trey. Not so fast, my friend. Not so fast.
Yeah, I got 4-0. Jason, well, he hasn't. See, he hasn't said yet. So, Jason, you got to tell us what you have. So, I got them 4-0, Tarvin, which gives them 2 losses for this season. So, that's a 10-win season for Mark Richt in my book.
Okay, this is 8-4 season. That's really going to cost Mark Richt his job. He got an extension, and when you get an extension, the bad things seem to happen. And also, Trey, when I look at Georgia, they have talent. Don't get me wrong. This is a good team. But the thing is, they're losing every top recruit in the state of Georgia. And Georgia is a hotbed of recruiting. I mean, every big-time program comes in and picks away from Georgia. Until Mark Richt can win recruiting in the state of Georgia in his own state from other teams, I think he's gone, man. There's no shot of him staying if he goes 8-4 this year, Trey.
So you got 8-4, Mark Richt, you know, getting fired. And I got him going 10-2, say, retaining the job. Jason has him going 11-1. Jason Humphreys has him going 11-1. So I'm guessing Mark Richt keeps his job in that situation too. So a lot of different predictions for Georgia.
Well,
we've been you and I have been on the same page pretty much for a lot of teams, but not Georgia.
Well, there's a lot of hate here now. I'm kidding. So I have a question for Trey and Jason. Is 10-2 and 11-1? I know 11-1 is. Trey, is that 10-2 good enough to win the SEC East, or is South Carolina or Florida still there?
No, I got South Carolina winning the East. So
okay.
To me, they're going to finish runner-ups in the East. But to me, that's still a pretty good season for Georgia, and I think a lot of people will just be disappointed. But I think anytime you win 10 games in the SEC, I think you'll take it.
Yeah, but when you look at that schedule, I mean, any other time, 10 wins would be a great season. But looking at their schedule, anything under 11 and playing in that SEC championship game to go to the national championship is going to be a disappointment to these fans. But I need to let them know that Georgia, even though they have talent, they're not going to be as good this year. They've got some missing pieces. They have problems in that team, and that's what's going to hurt them. And I think losing to Tennessee and, like, South Carolina and Florida right in those weeks is really going to tilt this team. And they're going to be in the Outback Bowl playing probably a rematch against Michigan State or someone.
Yeah, Tarvin, just so you know, Brandon Solomon says that he thinks that Georgia is going to beat Auburn, but it depends on how many suspensions they have going into the game.
Well, which team?
I think he's referencing Georgia, but...
they Auburn's going right now. You never know. They might be playing this team behind the gate, behind the real fence, with guards, with machine guns, the way they're playing right now. But, hey, Brandon, guys in the chat room, and then this is a hated rivalry now. And it started turning very hated when Nick Fairley a couple of years ago laid some cheap shots on Aaron Murray, Trey. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Yeah, I remember that. Brandon has Georgia going 10-2 with losses to South Carolina and Auburn.
Good job, Brandon. Good job, man. I'm glad somebody agrees with me on that. I'm glad I'm not the only one sitting here on this island.
And I think he's very very iffy, though, because he says it depends on suspension. So I'm just saying, Tarvin.
But, you know, when you look at Georgia's quarterback, he's great. Aaron Murray's a great quarterback, but I don't care how great of a quarterback you are. If you don't have the surrounding pieces, if you don't have someone blocking for you in a running game to take the heat off, the defensive lines in the SEC will kill you. And it's just a matter of time. And I'll make a bold prediction right now on this show. Aaron Murray misses at least two games this season with injury. So
that's a bold prediction, Tarvin.
Yeah, write that down. And that could be one of the reasons Tennessee beats them or one of the reasons Florida gets past them. I mean, you don't know, but it's so hard to stay healthy when you're standing upright almost, much less when you're getting banged up all the time. And so we're going to get off Georgia now, but I'm sure I'm going to have a lot of nasty emails and messages about that. But that's just the way I feel, guys.
I'm going to send you most of those.
And now let's go to the Pac-12. And a team, Trey, that is getting no love, no respect, not even being mentioned in the media right now, is Stanford. So with Andrew Luck gone, Trey, what do you see this team doing this season with 13 returning starters?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Stanford has a really, really favorable schedule. I mean, they're not, you know, and obviously they have a lot of their tough games on the road, which sucks, which is, you know, not good for them. But, I mean, this is not a team that's getting hardly any respect, and they're still a very, very talented football team, Tarvin. I mean, you talked about the 13 starters coming back. I mean, yeah, you lose Andrew Luck, which is obviously a critical piece, but I mean, I think he's obviously the difference in, say, a BCS game like they had last year and maybe a 9-win season or so, which we'll break down the schedule here in a second. But, I mean, you know, Stanford is not a team that's going to, I don't think, fall off to a 6-win season. I mean, I think they're still going to be very talented this year.
Yeah, it's their style of play, Trey, that keeps them in the game. They run the ball very physically between the tackles. They have very physical tight ends that can catch the ball with the best of them. And their defense is not that bad. Their secondary is one thing that, you know, but their linebackers are what keeps that team, that defense going. So, and you're exactly right, Trey, with their schedule, this is not going to be a 6-win team just because they lost Andrew Luck. So if you want to start breaking down the schedule, let's do it.
Sorry, I had you on mute there for a second. So yeah, Darwin, let's look at their first four games. They have San Jose State, the Spartans, the lesser-known Spartans. That's obviously a home game. They got Duke at home, so the ACC is going up to the Pac-12. And then they got USC. Now, that's a home game as well, so we'll see how you predict on that one. And then they got an open date, and then they got at the Washington Huskies. I think they're 3-1, Darwin, at those three. I think even though they got USC at home, USC is going to be a national title contender this year. I don't see Stanford being on that stage this year. They're going to be a very competitive football team. They're not going to be a BCS team this year. So I think USC wins that game. But that'll be sort of Stanford's really their test early in the season to see how good they are. If they're really close in that game, I think we'll see Stanford really, you know, playing well the rest of the season. But I got them 3-1.
I have them 2-2. I have them beating San Jose State and Duke, but I have them losing to Southern Cal and going on the road in Washington. This team's going to surprise some people this season. They're going to be a little better. But playing there is just almost impossible. It's a great home field advantage. So I have them 2-2.
All right, 2-2, Tarwin. So I think if I get this right, Jason says that they're going to go 4-0. So, Jason, if I got that wrong, let me know. I haven't seen Brandon's prediction yet, so I don't know if he's still around. But looks like Jason's got him 4-0. So I'd like to see, Jason, if you're on the chat room, tell me, I guess, why you think Stanford can beat USC this year. I'd like to – or call in and let us know. I'd like to hear your opinion on that one. So, Tarvin, looking at the next four, they got Arizona at home. They're at Notre Dame, at Cal Bears, and then at home against the Washington State Cougars. I think they lose at Cal, which a lot of people aren't looking at Cal this year, but I think that they get bit by Cal. I think they're going to beat Notre Dame, though. So I got them 3-1, so I got them at 2 losses so far at this point in the season.
Okay, I'm going to have them beating Arizona, and I'm going to have them losing to Notre Dame, and I'm going to have them losing to California.
So you got them at 2 losses as well that period.
No, hold on. I'm sorry. Losing to Notre Dame, beating California. I'm sorry. I was looking down a little bit.
Okay. So you have them losing just one.
They lose to Notre Dame.
Okay. So you have 2 losses. So you showed 3 losses at this point. I got 2.
Yep.
All right. So Brandon Solomon's got Stanford going 3-1. He says that USC will be holding a grudge for that last year OT defeat. And I think he's probably right. All right, Darvin, so let's look at the next four. We got at Colorado. They're home against the Beavers. Then they got at the Oregon Ducks. That's going to be a tough one. And then at UCLA. I think they're going to lose, Darvin, to Oregon for sure. I think Oregon's got a really good team this year. So I got them, again, 3-1 that stretch. I could put them at 3 losses for the season for me.
I have them 3-1, giving them 4 losses for the season. 8-4. They're going to lose.
So, Tarvin, I guess, okay. So, you have them at 4 losses. What do you think that means for, for Stanford? Do you think that's a good season given where they are this year? Do you think that's a little bit of a defeated season?
I think it's acceptable to the fan base because of the perception that they lost Andrew Luck. I think this is a very good team, but with a quarterback that's not Andrew Luck, I just don't see them. I don't see him being the leader of that team just yet. I think it might take him just a little while. But, I mean, the Pac-12's, you know, that's a tough schedule going to Notre Dame, to Oregon, even playing at Washington and home against USC. It's not a very easy schedule. So it's tough on a team that's trying to find, you know, a new quarterback. But from what I'm hearing, this quarterback is more experienced than people think.
Yeah. Yeah, he's I think he's going to play well, I mean, in that system for sure. It looks like Tarvin on the chat room, it says that Jason's got him going 4-0, beating USC. He says they always play USC tough. He has him going 3-1 near the end, losing to the Oregon Ducks. That's what we got in the chat room right now.
All right. Well, before we get off this, we got a couple minutes on this. I'm going to bring Quinn on the line to see what he thinks about Stanford. What's going on, Quinn?
Hey, Trey, how do you think Stanford's going to go into Notre Dame and beat them?
Quinn loves to hit me on Notre Dame questions. Quinn, I guess my answer is I don't think very highly of Notre Dame's team.
Tell by that.
Well, you know, Notre Dame has been, the last few years, has lost a lot of big games to the rivals. Obviously, Stanford and Notre Dame are, you consider that a rivalry. So I think I just don't think Notre Dame's got the horses this year to win all the big games they have. So I think it'll be a very competitive
After Notre Dame goes and beats Michigan and Michigan State, you'll be changing your mind pretty quick.
I think I would.
But Quinn, I have a question. I know you're an Auburn fan, so why do you love Notre Dame so much?
I just always have, and even though I've lived in Wisconsin most of my life, I was born in Indiana, and so I've just always liked them.
Okay. So being an Auburn fan, how did you become an Auburn fan?
Because of family because my grandpa and my aunt went there.
Okay, cool. I just didn't know. I was just trying to get a background on you. I know you live out in California now, correct?
No, I live in Wisconsin.
Okay.
Yeah, and Tarvin, we'll have to not break down Notre Dame's schedule just so Quinn doesn't stalk me down and...
Hey, Trey, I have a question for you, Trey. What does Quinn and Lou Holtz have in common?
What's the answer?
Championship for Notre Dame every season.
Yeah. Lou Holtz does predict a championship for Notre Dame every year.
I'm just playing with you, Quinn. You know that.
I know. I agree with you on Georgia's schedule, though, Brian. I think the lose to Missouri that second week, though, you guys seem to be forgetting they have four players suspended those first four games.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
Yeah, you're right.
They could possibly go 2-2 those first four games.
Yeah, they play Missouri, and do you think Vanderbilt can get them?
I think so, because those four players that are gone, it's not like they're bench warmers. Those are four key players.
Yeah, but I don't know. Georgia's got some talent. They've been stocking up the talent, Trey.
Yeah, and that's why I think they get through those. And just, Quinn, just to put your mind at rest, Brandon on the chat room says that Stanford starts off 8-2 because they lose to Notre Dame. So then they have Oregon laying some lumber to them and finishing at 9-3. So don't worry, Quinn. I mean,
But then, Brian, what do you think about all these Georgia fans saying they'll beat Auburn by 40 points again this season?
I love to hear that because I don't think people realize what's about to happen. I'm just going to sit back and grin and know what's about to come so they can talk all they want. But just like I said earlier, Quinn, when Georgia's expected to do something, I mean, it's 5-7, you know. That's about what you can expect almost from Mark Riggs. He will lay an egg this season, and he will be watching cars or cooking pizzas, Trey. I don't know yet.
You know, Carmen, I would compare you to some ESPN commentator about your Auburn predictions, but no one predicts Auburn to win a national championship every year like you do.
I've only predicted one, and that was 2 years ago. That's the only one I ever predict. I predict Auburn to win 8 games last season, which was one less than they did in the regular season. So, you know, I was a game off. This year, anything under 10 to me would be a disappointment. So it's not delusion. It's knowing the program and knowing what's coming. But this is the last year you will not hear Auburn in the conversation for the SEC championship. I promise you that.
That's all right. We record these shows, Tarver. We get it all down.
I think Auburn will be 9-3 or 10-2.
Yeah, I mean, it's a better Auburn team, guys, than what you think it's going to be. I'm not saying they're national championship caliber, not even saying that at all. I'm just saying their schedule's favorable. You know, they won 8 games last year with a brutal schedule and no real depth experience. This year they have a lot more depth, a lot more playmakers, I think a better quarterback than Trotter or Mosley, and a better coaching staff. And I just think if you add all these up, I mean, it could be a 7-win, 6-win, Trey. It could be, but I'm not thinking so. I'm thinking it's closer to 10 than it is 6.
Yeah, I can't believe these ESPN predictions, though.
I can. ESPN.
You can predict how they underestimate Auburn every year?
It's every season. And what it boils down to before we get off this subject real quick, guys, is Lee Corso was coming for College Game Day to Auburn when Pat Dye was coach. And he said a couple things in the media like they were going to get beat the week before and they won. Well, the next week, Game Day showed up. Lee Corso started walking on the field and Pat Dye told him to get the F off of his field. Ever since that time, it seems like ESPN is kind of, you know, not favored Auburn as much and give them a little more tough time. And I think ESPN was the reason Auburn didn't make it in 04. I mean, they kept promoting USC and Oklahoma so much that it just swayed the votes. But it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me at all, the hate for Auburn. I mean, when they get a national championship going, I mean, people are saying they cheated and pay the player, and it's always same thing this year. If we go 12-0 this year, you'll see the bag man's back again. He paid somebody, so. Well, I'm just ready to watch it. I'm just ready for football.
Speaking of the bag man, I guess I saw on an Auburn page on Facebook about how in the group about how Danny Sheridan is going to try and get more information or something. And it was like his real Twitter account, and he Twittered about it or something.
Yeah, if you go to his Twitter, you'll see my response to him, too. So, yeah, that is true. But, Quinn, man, I appreciate you calling in tonight, sir.
You're welcome.
And for you, Quinn, Sunday, we're going to break down Notre Dame's schedule, just for you.
All right.
All right, man. Well, you take care.
Okay.
All right. See you, Quinn. That was a good call. Thanks, Quinn, for calling. And, Trey, we're going to get off college football just a second and hit baseball. There's a lot of things going on in the baseball world right now. Tell us about those trades that are happening.
Yeah, Carmen, it's been a crazy couple of days in baseball. I mean, there's a couple of trades that out there that we all kind of knew were going to happen that were, you know, reported on. And there's a couple that really shocked me. The big one that shocked me, Carmen, was the Ichiro trade, not because I think Ichiro is a player who is the player he was back when he had, broke the single season hits record in the season. But just because, I mean, that trade didn't seem to have any publicity going into, the Yankees weren't talking about Ichiro, the Seattle Mariners weren't talking about Ichiro, and then bam, the trade happened. So that trade is going to have an impact, I think, for a lot of reasons. But then there's a lot of other trades that have been going on, which probably have a lot more playoff implications. The trade that Detroit made with the Marlins, and now the fire sale is on in Florida. We have the Miami Marlins who are now selling, and they got rid of a really quality pitcher. And obviously Omar Infante, which gives the Tigers, who are just terrible at second base, a good second baseman. And Anibal Sanchez is going to have a much better second half now that he's not playing for the Marlins. So that's going to, I think, put them over the White Sox in that division. I mean, they were already sort of making that push anyway. So that was a really good trade for Detroit. They gave up a really fantastic prospect for the Marlins, though. So that'll be one that down the road the Marlins can actually win that one. When you consider, 5 years from now. But, that's one of those trades that, really, really seemed very good for Detroit right now in the short term. And then the Dodgers getting what everyone's calling now is Hanley Wood. Hanley Ramirez goes to the Dodgers. He was a disgruntled player for the Marlins. And now you have him going to the Dodgers. And, Don Mattingly has come out and said he's going to have a fresh start. And, he's going to play whatever position, Hanley Ramirez has come out and said, hey, I'm all about the team now. So maybe he turns it around, but he's been just terrible, to be honest, for the Marlins. And the Marlins really got a good deal in that one as well because, just the $40 million I just freed up and, bad contract from Hanley Ramirez the Dodgers are going to be paying for. So, it'll be really interesting to see how Hanley Ramirez plays down the stretch with his, he's really one of those new faces and new places that really – makes him back to the hitter that he was. A couple of scouts who I follow on Twitter have been talking about Henry Ramirez, though, and how bad his swing is right now. He's got a lot of really bad hitches that really aren't easily correctable. It's going to take a lot of time in the batting cages. So we'll see if that's true, if those scouts know what they're talking about, or if it's just one of those things that, hey, Henry Ramirez has a new coach, Don Mattingly, who's a really good coach and ready to play for a new motivation. But Tarvin, I really see those.
How are you disgruntled, Trey, making millions and millions of dollars? How are you disgruntled?
Well, I think I would be disgruntled playing for Ozzie Guillen, to be honest, Tarvin. I think he's just a very, very caustic individual. He didn't like the move to third base anyway. He felt like, it was a knock on his abilities, that he was a proven all-star shortstop. But, the guy has not been producing the last couple of years. So,
Jose Reyes killed that team, man. Doing that, it just really hurt that team if you think about it.
Yeah, it is, Tarvin, for sure.
And what about Johnny Johnson? I'm hearing him on the block now. He could be up for trade, and who is he going to go to?
Well, Tarvin, that actually was interesting because the Marlins came out and said they were going to trade a starting pitcher, and they traded, obviously, Sanchez. And then they went and said, well, now we're going to trade Josh Johnson or Hanley Ramirez. And there was a big or. So if that was true, I think that we wouldn't still be hearing a lot of rumors about Josh Johnson. the really what boils down to is if the Marlins are going to be overwhelmed. And the real question I think a lot of fans are asking, Tarvin, is the Marlins just got this brand-new stadium, you know, purchased for them, and then they immediately start selling. It's the first sign of trouble. You know, if you're a Marlins fan, I mean, you just got this brand-new stadium. It's got a freaking dance club in it and an aquarium. And as soon as July hits, your team just starts dumping people. And if they trade Josh Johnson away, who is left on that team to root for? You know, I mean, a lot of good baseball folks are saying that the Marlins are doing a very smart thing. But from a standpoint of putting fans in the stadium and getting a fan base that's very loyal to you, they're not helping their brand out by, you know, getting the new stadium and saying, ah, now we're going to fire sale. And Jeffrey Loria is not a guy who a lot of people like anyway, Tarvin.
Well, I mean, you can go right now and you can – I could walk up behind the plate and sit down in a Miami game. And now – and that's with their studs. You start selling these guys now, and it's the worst thing in the world to do because you know as well as I do, you make money by your ticket sales, and they're not going to be that much. So I'm just not very impressed with those trades. I mean, I understand trading Hanley Ramirez in a way, but you're starting to trade. You're giving up right now. How many games are they out of first at the moment out of the East? Like 10?
That's about right.
I mean, but still, I mean, you have a good enough team to get on a run and to make a second wild card. So it's just like they threw in the towel. So if you're playing for Miami right now, do you have any motivation to really try the rest of the season? It seems like your organization has given up.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what it seems like to the fans, Tarvin. I mean, the Marlins are 13 and a half games back from the Nationals at this point. And in the wild card, they are, let's see, let me pull the wild card real quick. But
9.5, 10 games, I bet.
Yeah, they're 9 games back. So, you know, I think it's actually a very good baseball move, Tarvin, to be quite honest with you. Hanley Ramirez was a player who had basically not lived up to his hype in quite a number of years. You know, Anibal Sanchez was an under 500 pitcher. Omar Infante isn't the guy you're building a team on anyway. And Josh Johnson will be interesting to see if they do get rid of him, what they get in return, because at least in the 2 trades they've had so far, Tarvin, I think they've won long-term. Obviously, you never know how prospects are going to turn out, but they got a real stud from the Tigers. So we'll see if this is, you know, it ends up being a very smart baseball move, freeing up such a large amount of money from Hanley Ramirez for a player really who we'll see what the Dodgers get out of him. So far, you know, while you're a fan, you probably don't like it. From a long-term baseball standpoint, it may be pretty smart.
Yeah, and if I'm going to trade Josh Johnson, I'm going to go ahead and do what I'm still doing. I'm going to go ahead and get a young team, get some great draft picks maybe, and just try to build that team, build your minor league organization as well. And just have, you know, like the Braves, they don't have the big star names, you know, the free agents, but you know, they always develop them well. So, speaking of the Braves trade, Ryan Dempster, it was almost a done deal going to Atlanta. First of all, I don't know why they would want Ryan Dempster, but I'm glad he didn't come. But second of all, the deal fell through, and it's not going to happen. Who do you see the Braves going to get right now? Because they're going to need somebody to catch the Nationals. I know they're only 4.5 out, but the Nationals don't appear to be slowing down any.
No. And we'll see what happens in the Nationals. Shut down Strasburg, but – now, Braves are pretty much rumored with every big name arm out there. The Braves have their name out there, which is interesting, Tarvin, because to me, I almost think the Braves need a bat more than they do an arm. But with some of the pitching not really living up to hype this year, you know, Mike Minor struggled. Jair Jurgens has been, you know, up and down from the minor league. So, I mean, they do need another arm for sure. I do agree with you. I think Dempster would have been a terrible decision. And that still may go through, by the way. They're still trying to convince Dempster to basically take the deal. The Cubs kind of did him dirty and not telling him basically before they traded him. I mean, this is a guy who gets the veto. So, you know, basically the news reports came out and Dempster finds out by online. I mean, that's not a good organizational move. So Dempster pretty much got turned off in Atlanta. But, you know, I don't know what the Braves were going to give up for Dempster because the names of the prospects weren't really – I couldn't find those released. But I'll tell you, if the Braves gave up any of their top arms or top prospects for Dempster, that would have been a terrible decision in my book. Now, if that becomes Zach Greinke, you have a different, obviously a different matter.
Trey, I wouldn't give him. I wouldn't give over four wooden bats for him if I was the Braves. I mean, he's terrible. I mean, if he comes to the Braves, I'm not going to go to another game this season if I have to see him on that team. I mean, if you really want to be a contender and you want to win this thing and you go get Ryan Dempster, come on now. I'd rather you cut somebody and not even pick anybody up than to go get somebody like that. This guy's out of his prime. He's a rag arm. He's washed up. I mean, him and Chipper Jones are, you know, about the same in my book. They're washed up. So, but, you know, Josh Johnson, Trey, not to go back too much on him, but he's rumored to be going to Texas. Could you imagine if Texas got Josh Johnson?
Well, I mean, Texas, they're in the running for a lot of these arms as well. And I'll tell you, the real name to watch, Tarvin, is Zach Greinke. I mean, this is a former Cy Young winner. There's been questions about his health. You know, and Josh Johnson, obviously, is a big arm as well. But I look at Zach Greinke being the real steal here. Whoever gets him is going to have a huge advantage going down the stretch, whether it's the Braves, the Rangers, the Angels, whoever, all these teams are looking for arms, the Pirates. You know, Zach Greinke, everyone was talking about his health. He went out the other night and threw 95 miles an hour. So, I mean, that sounds pretty healthy to me. So, if Zach Greinke goes to one of these very, you know, good contending teams or Josh Johnson, that's going to be a huge advantage going down the stretch.
Yeah, and I just want to see the Braves make a good deal. But let's stay in baseball a minute, Trey. Cole Hamels now. I mean, I'm still scratching my head on this, man. He signs a $144 million deal, $24 million per season, 6 years. Are you kidding me? Am I missing something here, Trey? Because I know I haven't followed baseball as strong as I used to, but that'll change. But what happened here? Is Cole Hamels worth that kind of money?
Well, yeah, the funny thing about this whole deal, and I don't think he's worth it, to be honest, Tarvin. I think he would have gotten the money in the free agent market. So I think the Phillies now have three pitchers who have $100 million contracts. So, you know, whatever that's worth. But the interesting thing about the Cole Hamels thing, Tarvin, is they offered him a contract, I think, 10 months ago that was $60 million less. So in 10 months' time, the Phillies over it, or however you want to term it, reevaluated the contract for Cole Hamels, and he became a $60 million man more richer in a 10-month time by basically not signing that first agreement with the Phillies when I think it was the Phillies who pulled off that deal. So you're talking about the Phillies, I mean, they could have signed him for $60 million last 10 months ago. So, you know, I don't think he's actually worth it. I think he would have gotten it, though, in the free agent market.
Rumor is he's a Penn State fan, and he's wanting to give that $60 million to Penn State to help pay their fine.
I think he's going to keep it himself.
Yeah, but that's a waste of money. I mean, Cole Hamels is, you know, I think he's past his best years. He's only 28, but I'm just not impressed with, and I don't know why they're paying so much money for these guys, and it just, sometimes it makes me scratch my head. You want to see someone have a bad year, give them a raise almost in baseball, but this is the largest pitcher contracts in Major League Baseball history. CC Sabathia is number one, a 7-year, $161 million contract. Cole Hamels is now second, and this is history. This is not this season. This is in the history. 6-year, 140. Johan Santana, 6, 137. Barry Zito, 7 years, 126. And Mike Hampton, you know, 8 years, 121 million. So, in the history of baseball, the biggest, second biggest contract ever for a pitcher is Cole Hamels. Does that, I mean, that surprises you, right, Trey? Because I know you know baseball, and I know you study baseball. That has to be.
Oh, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, Cole Hamels is not one of your top five arms in the game. Cole Hamels is a number one type starter. I don't doubt that, Tarvin. I don't doubt Cole Hamels is a very talented pitcher. He's, I mean, an awesome postseason pitcher. I mean, he's the kind of guy you can give the ball to in the postseason and know he's going to perform. So, but is he the second best pitcher, you know, in the MLB right now? Is he even in the top five? I don't think the answer to any of those questions is yes. You know, I mean, is he, you know, he's the third $100 million pitcher on the Phillies staff. So, I mean, the Phillies just are paying buku-tal amount of money for these guys. But we'll see what they get in long-term investment, because a lot of times with these pitchers' contracts, they'll play well for the first couple of years, and then after that, you know, at the end of these contracts, you're really regretting it. So I think probably by the end of this contract, you're going to see the Phillies really regretting it.
Yeah, and staying in baseball, Trey, did you hear about Cal Ripken's 74-year-old mother abducted?
I did hear that. I hear she was returned safely, or she was found, so that's a good story, and it ended well, I guess.
They're still trying to figure out what happened with her, but, I mean, why in the world would you abduct a 74-year-old woman and not demand anything from his son, you know, her son? It's just, I don't know what this world's coming to, man. It's just, it's getting crazier by the day, not by the year, by the day. So, anything in baseball you want to touch before we move on?
No.
Okay, and anything you want to discuss before we leave tonight? Any topic?
No, sorry, man. We kind of hit everything that that I wanted to mention tonight. We'll see what breaks the rest of the week. I think this is the way this week's going. I think there'll be a lot of more trades by the end of the week.
Oh, it's gonna be a lot. And my last question to you, Trey: does O'Brien stay at Penn State?
You know, I watched his SportsCenter interview, and the look on his face seemed very defeated. I mean, he said everything that you want him to say, but, man, he looked like a guy who'd been through it. So I think he'll be around this year, but I don't know if the end of this, if he's the same Penn State coach that they'll have by the end of their probation. I think it'd be a very tough situation for him. And the only way that he stays and at Penn State, I think the only way, if I'm him, I stay, is if I have some sort of assurance that this is my job for the next, until I don't want it. You know what I mean? Until I'm done. Because if he stays with Penn State through this, and let's say in 6 years, after probation's over, 2 years, they're still winning 8 games or whatever it is, and they fire him, I mean, to me, if they're going to stick with him, you know, or he's going to stick with them through this, they better stick with him for the next 5 to 10 years.
And I'm mixed emotion about this trade because I think this guy's ready to, I mean, I think he's good enough to be a great head coach one day, and I think he could be a hot commodity. After all, he's replacing Joe Paterno. I mean, you know, it's going to be hard to fill those shoes, you know, in the win column and such. But, I mean, his prime of his career is going to be in the next 6 years. So are you going to spend your prime really trying to recruit JUCO players and walk-ons to field a team to get beat, you know, every week in and week out? Or are you going to go somewhere else? I'm with you 100%, Trey. I think he stays this one season to kind of show people, hey, I didn't take off and run. But somebody's going to come calling during this season, and I think somewhere towards the end of the season he's going to announce he's leaving Penn State, and he's going to take a good job. It's not going to be a Southern Miss or someone like that. It's going to be a good job. I think someone's going to take a chance on him, especially being the coordinator for New England with Tom Brady for a few years.
And, Tarvin, just before you leave, I'll give you one thing just to throw maybe hopefully our listeners into a fray. Arkansas should recruit this coach. What do you think?
Hey, I mean, you know, I never thought of that, but, you know, hearing you say that, that's not a bad idea. I mean, this he could come in. Anybody's better than John L. Smith. Or so, yeah, Arkansas, but I'm hearing they're going after Petrino after this season. I heard Bobby Petrino is going to be back in Arkansas. Just a little rumor. It could be true, could be false, but I could see Bobby Petrino coming back to Arkansas. But that is a good thought, Trey. Though that's a real good thought.
Yeah, just trying to get everybody out. Make sure you're paying attention.
All right. Well, we're back Sunday night, and I want to thank all the listeners out there. And it's July, and it's 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night going on. And for those that listen, and we're getting a lot of hits on our archives after the show. So, Trey, we're killing it in that area too. So I just want to thank everybody for listening to the show and supporting it, and we really want you to turn out, especially when football's starting up. We have spring training coming for the NFL. The camps are underway now, Trey, correct?
Yeah, everybody's reporting to camp now, a lot of the rookies, a lot of the veterans now. One of the bigger stories out of the camps is, you know, Mike Wallace and the Steelers. We can talk about that another day, but, you know, it's all the camps are reporting, And as we get closer, Tarvin, I want to talk more and more NFL because I'm super excited for another NFL season. Love the NFL, love college football as well. But, you know, as you and I have talked about it, the September and October time frame is my favorite time of year for sports, and I'm excited for it coming up.
I'm so excited. And, again, thank you for the listeners. And the Dez Bryant issue before we go, Trey, his mom decided not to press charges and really said he didn't do anything violent towards her. Are you buying that?
Yeah, in domestic starving, like I told you, man, there's always about 9 degrees of what could be true and what couldn't be true. So I'll tell you, do I believe it? Probably not, but not in a way that, I mean, I'm not like beyond a reasonable doubt believing anything out of that story. So, I mean, who knows what's going on with that family dynamic, but it is just not a good story. And no matter how it turns out, it's a very disappointing story for me and my view of Dez Bryant.
Okay, and the two teams we're going to break down, Trey, Sunday night, we're going to do Notre Dame, and we're going to go out to the Big 12 and grab Oklahoma. So what do you think about that?
I think you're trying to get Quinn all over me is what you're really trying to do, Tarvin. Nice try.
And you know Quinn will be calling in for this one, and I'm going to let him actually be live with us on that show, so he can pick the Notre Dame schedule with us. So, Quinn, if you're listening out there, make sure you get in and join the festivities because I'm interested. I'm going to sit back and just relax and let Trey and Quinn go at it during this Notre Dame schedule. So, Trey, I don't want you upsetting Quinn on purpose now. I don't want you having him losing to the National Guard or anything like that now.
All right, yeah, I won't have him go 0-12.
Quinn, you heard it. Trey's at least giving him one win. And I know Air Force won't be one of them. So I think Trey's partial to the Air Force. So. But anyway, thanks for listening. 9 o'clock Eastern, Sunday night, be with us, 8 p.m. Central. And if you're out on the West Coast, which, Trey, you are, I believe, 6 p.m. Eastern time, Sunday night, join us for all those Ducks and Southern Cal fans. So anyway, great show tonight. Thanks for everyone for calling and listening, and we'll see you Sunday.
See you, bud.
See you.